if you really look at the stuff that happens to you and trace back the good things that exist now, they almost always go to a bad thing.
Sometimes you need to fail. The need to fail.
Hey, what's going on, everyone? Welcome back to The Need to Fail. I'm your host, Don Finelli. Welcome back. Thanks for tuning in, guys. This is so weird just talking into a microphone. Like, I know there's people listening, but like, you're not listening right now. It's just me sitting in my kitchen talking into a fucking microphone. And it's just weird. But thanks for tuning in. Thanks for all the comments and on the first episode. That was really cool of you guys. Please keep your questions and comments coming to the needtofail@gmail.com. I'll answer everything there. If you have any anecdotes, quotes that you want to share with me, anything that's getting you through the day, shoot me an email, needtofail@gmail.com, or post anything on questions or anything like that on my Tumblr. It's the same thing. It's the need to fail. This episode's guest is Benjamin Apple, and Benjamin and I met in a 401, Will Hines's 401, back in 2008, I believe. He was so funny in that class. He's just one of those guys that I was like, ah, shit, man, this guy's really good. No fucking way I'm going to be better than this dude. And then we immediately took Will Hines's 501 together after, and that was a 12-week course. And it was a super stacked, fun class. I remember our class show, our first class show. I think we had three in a 12-week class. The first one, I was so nervous and everyone was so good. And I was like, oh man, I gotta prove myself. And I didn't do shit. I was so bad. I hung back. I was in my head. I tried to do a walk-on, and I remember I just kind of walked out, and I was trying to, I think there was like a campfire and they were telling ghost stories. I was like the only one not in the goddamn group game. So I came out and tried to start acting a ghost story out by myself, but I was like half-assed committing to it. People were like looking to the side, being like, what the fuck is Finelli doing right now? Yeah, it was all weird, man. I really bombed that show. I totally remember that sticking in my head. Being afterwards like, damn, man, I don't even want to go back to class. That was embarrassing. What the fuck was I doing? And everyone was like so funny, I thought, and good. And I just sucked on that one. But I remember the next two were super fun. Got back on the horse, had a couple good classes after that. Yeah, Benjamin, I'm super happy to interview him because he's a good friend of mine. He was kind of like one of those guys that we all looked up to in our generation. It's like super, super great at improv, a really nice dude, very like creative, and just really into the scene, like was always at shows and stuff like that. So we're going to talk about that. And I know UCB auditions are coming up for Harold teams and Lloyd teams. And this is especially a good episode because Benjamin takes us through his journey with that. He didn't get placed on a team a couple times after auditioning. And I think it's a great episode. If you are someone auditioning for the first time or, you know, fourth time, this is probably a good one to listen to. And if you don't know who Benjamin is, shame on you. But he is currently a writer for Late Night with Jimmy Fallon. And he was a UCB guy. He was on the mod team and the current mod team, Onassis, great mod team. He was also on a Harold team that's still going, Bucky. And I was a groupie of one of his first indie teams, Smirk. They were so good. He also contributed to writing headlines for The Onion. And you can check him out at benjaminapple.com. He's got a great website where he has a really funny series going on right now called Questions and Answers. So it's a great little web series that he's doing right now. So here it is. Here's the interview with Benjamin Apple. Thanks, guys. Enjoy. I'm so pumped to be sitting here with Benjamin Apple, a friend of mine. We met in 401, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And we're just kind of chilling out in a soundproof room right now, drinking some brews,
yep.
Talking about times.
So thanks for doing
not
this,
old
man.
Times, just times.
Just times in general. Just talking about the times.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thanks for doing this, man.
Thanks for having me.
No, I'm very pumped to have you here. So do you want to give everyone maybe like a quick background, like where you grew up and kind of the bullet points of like how you got to where you are now?
Sure.
Kind of thing? Cool.
I grew up in the suburbs of Philly.
Cool.
My parents raised me there. I grew up in Philly. I went to college, a little place in Tennessee.
Right.
Came back to Philly after that. And I couldn't really find work in web programming, which is what I was doing.
Right.
Trying to start doing anyway. So when I expanded my search to New York and D.C., I realized, oh, there's a lot of jobs. Just not in Philadelphia.
Right, right, right.
So I moved to New York to get a job.
When was that?
Late 2006, cool. September 2006.
Cool. When did you graduate? 2005?
Yeah.
Cool.
And before moving to New York, I had very vague ideas of eventually wanting to be in filmmaking in some way, but I had never done anything to pursue that or educate myself or anything.
You kind of had that brewing in you, or you're like obsessed with like movies and stuff like that?
I liked movies
and
I thought it would be fun to make them. And I acted in a couple of short films in college with friends of mine that I liked a lot. But I disagreed with them a lot on how it was being done.
Right.
And it was weird because watching those short films get made, I was like, I want to make my own short film.
Yeah.
Short film.
That kind of inspired you to kind of do your own thing. Did you grow up with like any like comedy in particular or anything like that? Was there like when you were growing up, was it like an SNL kind of thing, or was it like a lot of people grew up with like a funny family, or people were
I think my family is very funny.
Mm-hmm.
My mom's grandparents lived near us, and they were both very funny people.
Gotcha.
And they would kind of be our audience. Like, we would try to make them laugh. And I grew up very religious. My dad is a preacher, and like very conservative. And so the kind of comedy we're allowed to ingest—that's not the right word.
Yeah.
was very limited. Like, we watched a lot of family sitcoms and everything. My mom and dad loved Letterman, so we would, like, almost every night we would turn Letterman on and then turn it off after a certain number of dirty jokes.
Wow.
Like, they would sense a dirty joke coming and change the channel.
Holy shit.
Because you can tell from the setup.
Yeah.
And then they would change it back. And if after a certain number of dirty jokes, my mom or my dad would be like, this is filthy, let's turn it. But then the next night we would watch it again until...
Because they really enjoyed it.
Because, he's hilarious. And his sense of humor really appealed to them.
Awesome.
And kind of the same thing with SNL.
Right. Like, but not like sketch. Oh, okay. So SNL you'd watch, they do the channel change?
I remember we watched SNL during the 92... Was 92 an election year or was it 94? 92, right?
Shit, man. Don't ask me this.
Okay. I think it was 92.
92. Yeah, let's do 92.
Election year. We watched all of the, like, the Dana Carvey and I think Phil Hartman, like all of the political impressions and everything. We started watching SNL.
Cool, cool.
Anyway,
yeah,
I moved to New York not to do comedy, but a friend of mine said, "Oh, you can always go to UCB," because I was broke at the time. I was in debt. I didn't know where to just spend my time when I was not at work.
Sure.
So I started going to UCB school night because it's a free show.
Yeah. School night Wednesdays at 11 p.m.
Yeah.
Shout out to school night.
And I saw Jason Sudeikis do improv, and I saw Zach Woods and Charlie Sanders, and I just...
It's a hell of a fucking lineup for school night.
That's great. The improv was way more exciting to me than the stand-up or anything.
Gotcha.
So I started going to Herald Night and then started taking classes in spring of 2007.
2007.
And before that, I was just not... I wasn't a comedy nerd.
I
wasn't like a big comedy person or anything.
Right. Yeah, I was the same way. I remember like not being, well, at least meeting people at UCB, you meet a lot of at the Upright Citizens Brigade Theater, you meet a lot of like comedy nerds, mm-hmm. like people that like know the ins and outs of like sketch comedy. And
I get really jealous.
Me too.
I'm when just people like, are like, Christ. Oh yeah, when I was 14, I had all of those on VHS and I watched right? every episode yeah. and everything.
Yeah. They like memorize episodes. They, yeah. oh, I was just like, Christ, man, I feel like it was intimidating for me. Mm-hmm. I remember like when I started going, I was like, oh man, I'm fucking intimidated here. Cause everyone just seems to know much more about comedy. Like I knew what I found funny, yeah. but then there was this whole world that I was like, I don't even know about this shit. That yeah. would I find this funny? I don't know. It just I'm intimidated by it. So I don't know if I should laugh. Mm-hmm. You know, I was like overthinking it.
I still feel that way, and I still am nervous that somebody will bring something up that I don't know about.
Right.
And that when I say, oh, I've never seen that, they'll realize that I'm faking it. Mm-hmm. Or that I like they've found out that if I haven't seen that or if I haven't yeah. listened to that, then
like you're just like, what are you doing deal. Here, man?
Yeah, exactly.
Everyone knows that.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like
they would revoke my leather jacket and kick me out of the gang. Or yeah.
So you start taking classes, you get obsessed with kind of like Harold Knight. I'm sure you go to Cage Match and you start seeing.
I was never a comedy nerd, but I immediately became an enormous UCB nerd improv nerd. I would go to Harold Knight every Tuesday on Saturday night, I would go see all of the weekend teams.
Right.
Several times I went to shows and recorded them, and I transcribed a couple of shows because I wanted to analyze.
I remember that. I remember seeing one on your blog.
Yeah. It was super
a Robin Williams show that you...
Yeah.
It was amazing. I like read through it and was like laughing. Yeah. You know, it was that well done.
Robin Williams was a perfect team to do it with because it really, like one of their scenes... It reads like a written sketch.
Yes.
Because they're just so so quick.
So how long were you doing that for? You were taking classes and you were going to see shows pretty regular. I remember seeing you there. I remember you would always come in with like a backpack, uh-huh. just a little late every time, and kind of sneak in and just sit right on the ground.
Yeah, I still sit on the ground because there's those two steps in the middle, like right behind the pillar.
Right.
Where I'd rather sit and not be able to see everything than stand and be far away.
Right.
But I did that for a long time mm-hmm. and started getting into the indie scene. And I've probably been on like maybe 8 or 10 indie teams.
Yeah.
4 or 5 of them were very active and actually did a lot of shows.
Right. Yeah. You were definitely, I think when a lot of us were kind of coming up together, you were one of those people that we all, I guess, looked up to, or because you were so involved, you were so determined, you were in classes, like it was almost like you were in the know. Like we would always be like, and you were fucking hilarious too. So that was that. There was that thing too. It wasn't Thank just you. Like you were a comedy nerd and you were always around, but you were like very funny and. I remember, you know what I mean? It was just like one of those things like, fuck, man. Because like we met in 401 and I was just like, this kid's too good. What's he doing here? But you had taken a 501, I think before that Will Hines 401 that we took.
That's
and
true.
Then we jumped into another 501 together.
And actually that was, I guess you and I met around the time I had my first like kind of crisis of confidence where I was like, mm-hmm. I don't feel like I'm doing this right.
Cool. Talk about that. Like what was going on?
What happened was I went through the first.
Hi everybody. Tim Heidecker here with huge news. We have a terrific episode of Office Hours Live prepared for you. We had the great stand-up comedian Kyle Kinane come in and a very special in-studio music session from legendary Mdou Mokhtar. You're not going to want to miss this one. You can find it on your podcast app of choice by going to Sears or Macy's and getting an iPod and then coming home, charging it up, and listening through your app.
We're talking so UCB heavy that
I know.
Feel the need to like stop and explain stuff, but I feel like
Most of the people listening to this right now are probably going to be UCB people.
UCB
yeah.
people anyway.
Yeah.
But I took the first four improv classes back to back. One of them was even an intensive. Mm-hmm. So I took them about as fast as you can take
right.
them.
An intensive usually lasts a week long. Yeah. So if you take a bunch of intensives in a row, you can legitimately take almost like what a normal class is 8 weeks. Yeah. You can go through this in 3 weeks and take yeah. three levels, basically.
Which is stupid.
Hindsight, yeah.
But I finished the first four classes really quick, and then the fifth class I took was Anthony King.
Uh-huh.
And he doesn't fuck around.
Right.
He doesn't he's there as like the guy who knows how it works,
mm-hmm.
and he will tell you why it's not working, and it's right. up to you to keep up and mm-hmm. like keep that metal notebook of
yep.
of what you've done right and what
Absolutely.
You've done wrong, and like it's up to you. He just puts it in your hands.
Mm-hmm.
And I wasn't ready for that. I still needed more, like, coddling, I guess.
Sure.
You know, like, encouragement. Like, you are good at it.
Here, right, right, right.
Do whatever you want. You can't make a wrong decision, that kind
right.
of thing.
So were you like, I can't do this anymore?
Yeah.
Really?
I suffered through that class. I mean, I didn't want to quit, but I did.
Okay.
I did feel like maybe I'm not actually good at this because it
gotcha.
Felt like everybody else in the class was having an easier time than I was.
Right.
I felt like every time I got up, I felt like I stuck out like a sore thumb, like everybody was thinking he doesn't know what he's doing.
Right, right, right. So there was this kind of like confidence issue, kind of it brought you back a couple steps.
Definitely.
You felt like you were like, oh, I'm going up. Yeah, and then this is like take two steps back kind
yeah.
of thing. Gotcha.
And improv is like success in improv is very closely related to confidence.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, you know, it's a weird dynamic, but if you don't feel like you're good at it, you're kind of immediately not good at it.
Right.
Not necessarily, but you know, that can happen.
Right.
So I said, okay, let me take a step back and take a 401 again.
Mm-hmm.
And because I thought maybe I could trick myself into feeling like I was really, really good. And it completely worked.
Yeah.
It helped also there was a Will Hines class because
yeah.
Will is very, you know, easygoing. He makes
right.
you very comfortable.
Yeah. He's no bullshit too, but he's he is like inspiring too. Like getting a laugh from him makes you want to keep going,
yeah,
kind of thing.
Yeah.
And I remember being in that class. It was a fun class too. I remember it being pretty aggressive, but the 401's very weird because everyone's kind of like wanting to be in advanced classes,
yeah.
And but it was still like a fun class. I remember that.
Mm-hmm.
And we started like a practice group after that. I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And it was a lot of fun.
Yeah. That's around a time where, I feel like this probably happens with pretty much everything, where you've learned enough of something to see how it should go.
Right.
And when you see somebody else succeed, you know why they succeeded. Like,
right.
you can draw a diagram of how they succeeded, but you can't yet, like, make your body do that thing.
Yeah, yeah. You saw the steps that they took to get there.
Yeah.
But like for some reason, when you try to do that, there's like everything gets in the way or
yeah.
you can't see the path that they took.
Exactly.
It's not as easy or something.
And then in hindsight, you see exactly how you fucked it up.
Right.
Like you know enough to feel totally stupid.
Right. Oh, absolutely. So that regained your confidence. Then you started taking
Big
class.
Time.
And then we jumped into that 501 together.
Yeah.
Another Will Hines class. It was a 12-week
yeah,
class,
yeah, yeah.
which was another great class.
Yeah.
I'm sure I've talked about it before on another podcast, but... That was 12 weeks long. It was super fun. So what was going on? What you move on from that? You start auditioning for Harrelton's,
yeah, yeah.
right?
I started. I think the very first time I was eligible, I just didn't know about it yet.
Mm-hmm.
I think that I missed one.
Right.
So I signed up for the next one, and at that point, for whatever reason, people in this community kind of have this collective agreement of like who is in what position.
Right.
And I had a lot of friends telling me that I was about to get on Harold team.
Yeah. I might have been one of them.
probably
one of those people.
I feel like you and I, like, we were always encouraging of each other.
Yep,
and we knew
totally.
Like, that guy's gonna
Yeah, you know. This guy's great. Yeah. Well, I'm not saying that about myself, but I'm saying that about
no,
you.
No,
I'm
that guy's
great.
That guy's great. Benjamin Apple about Don Finley. hey, you're great.
Hey,
it's me talking
it's
to
me.
You.
It's me. Yeah, this is Don Finley talking about Benjamin
yeah.
Apple. You're great, man.
Don, you're great.
Yeah.
I'm not quoting myself now.
Yeah,
I'm just
good.
Saying it. So anyway, and everybody does that. And they kind of, it's a weird thing where you're kind of doing it to encourage somebody, but you're also kind of doing it because you almost want to call dibs on that person's success.
Yeah.
Like, this is like,
oh, I saw them.
Yeah, yeah. Like, oh, I knew that guy was going to be great.
Yeah.
I knew
my instincts are right.
Yeah. Like, who cares?
It gives a shit.
But anyway, I didn't get on.
Right. Did you get a call back that year?
I did get a call back.
Right. I remember that year I did not. I remember feeling fucking horrible.
Yeah.
But it's tough.
It's tough.
Yeah. It's tough.
It's tough.
It's a tough one.
So that, anyway, to fast forward a little bit, mm-hmm. I didn't get on and I was like, oh, well, you know, it's my first time.
You weren't like totally broken up about it?
No.
No, you weren't crushed. You were just kind of like, all right, that was one down kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly.
So you still had the love for improv. You still, now you were like, it kind of opened your eyes a little bit.
Yeah.
There's no like smoke and mirrors.
It opened my eyes. All illusions disappeared. I saw it clearly. But I did, I was like, I'm glad that I got a callback because now I know what a callback feels like.
Yep.
And if I can get a callback next time,
sure,
I'll be more confident.
Right.
So next, whenever, I don't know how many months went by, but the next one happened. And that time when I didn't get on a team, I was pretty upset.
Right.
And
I'll preface that with, like, I remember that's the year I got onto a team. And when I found out that you didn't, and a couple of us that didn't, uh-huh. were all like, well, Benjamin had to get on. It was one of those things where uh-huh. it was like, you were killing it. You're super great, funny, like, was active still in the community, like going to shows, like really mm-hmm. like putting in maximum effort, I would say. Like the person that could put in maximum effort, I'm pretty sure you did that. So we were all kind of shocked.
Maybe. I mean, I feel like there was at least one period in my life where I was definitely putting too much energy into improv.
Sure.
But that's what, like, if you put that much energy into something and you don't get the response from the universe that you are imagining in your head is going to be the response to all of this effort, it's incredibly discouraging.
I'm sure. Because you put in all your time, all your effort, and it didn't happen. So now it's like, well, so what happens inside of you're crushed, right? Or is it like, you're fucking dead, right? Dead inside, right?
Yeah.
But like,
what
are you?
Like?
So tell me about that, man. How do you think?
I got very discouraged, and here's the thing about advice. And we ask anybody for advice, people can only give you advice based on their experiences.
Right.
So somebody who like put a lot of effort into something and never got what they wanted is gonna tell you to give up. And somebody who the opposite happens is going to tell you don't give up,
right,
et cetera.
Yep.
And some people I would read on, you know, a lot of people in this community have blogs or back then they would start IRC posts and stuff. And one of the things people talked about was, should you be doing a lot of improv to get better, or should it be just a kind of a hobby? And some people would say you can't get better unless you're practicing three times a week, 3 hours.
Right.
And even sometimes some of the same people would say you can't get better unless you're practicing 3 times a week. And then they would also say, hey, man, like, you can't be good at improv unless you're a well-rounded person.
Right, right.
And also I noticed that sometimes when people say you need to be a well-rounded person, they're saying be a well-rounded person so you can be good at improv.
Yeah.
Yeah. Read some books so that you can be better at improv.
Yeah, fuck your humanity.
Exactly.
Fuck your real life. Yeah.
That always seemed weird to me.
Yeah, that's funny.
But each time I didn't get on a team, I kind of did something in response.
Okay.
Like I started a new improv team.
So that was your kind of way of dealing with it.
Yeah. Okay. I think the first time I didn't get on, I started my blog. Which is so stupid.
Right.
Like I don't need this. I can start a blog.
Right. Is it like more of like it was a motivator for you to do something like a personal project?
When you see like the auditions are on June 6th,
right,
and you know that the new teams are gonna perform at the end of June, start performing at the end of June. In your mind, as June 6th and those dates approach, you're like, that's gonna be my first Herald Night. That's going to be my first whatever.
So did you ever visualize that happening?
Yeah.
Were you, and this is always something, I don't mean to cut you off, but this is like a part where I'm always interested. Like, did you really believe you were going to get on? Was it like, I really appreciate what everyone's saying, but like, who knows? Or are you like a visualizer? Do you see yourself getting on and do you feel yourself getting on?
At the time, I didn't do a lot of visualizing during that period of my life. But I thought with improv, and with specifically getting on a Herald team, I was like, I'm gonna tell myself that this is a thing that's going to happen. Mm-hmm. And I think maybe that'll make it happen.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember specifically that I put it on my calendar that I I think that I put on my calendar the day that I expected to get on a Herald team.
Okay.
So like the day after callbacks, because that's usually when it happens. Yep. I put it like I get on a Herald team.
That's cool.
And it's not like I was going around telling people, sure, hey, I'm going to get on a Herald team.
No, no,
but
no.
Just between
that's
me
a personal
and myself.
Thing. Yeah, yeah.
I was like, this is when it's going to happen.
That's it.
Didn't happen. Right. Deleted it from the calendar.
Now, was it something that you looked at every day and you reassured yourself, or is it something that you put on once and you just kind of believed that it was there?
I mean, you can't not think about auditions when they're coming
sure.
up. So you, when they're coming up, that's pretty much all you're thinking about. If
gotcha.
You're an insane UCB freak like me and like
right.
the people listening to this podcast, that's all you can think about.
Sure.
And you do that kind of thing where you're like, oh, I'm not going to be thinking about it. But the reason I'm not going to be thinking about it is so that I can get it. Like,
right.
you really are, as it is in the background.
Sure.
So anyway, the second time I didn't get it, that's the time that I was really crushed. Because the first
sure.
time it was just like, oh, that'd be nice.
Yeah.
Second time was really hard. Third time was harder.
Right.
And the fourth time, I think that I was becoming a little numb, where I was like,
gotcha.
You know, I've performed a lot in front of the people that make these decisions. And
right.
if they don't think that I should be on a team, maybe I shouldn't be on a team. Maybe
gotcha.
I'm not. Maybe I'm
right.
not good.
So was
or
it after
your,
like, fourth time that you were like, I think I'm going to start maybe moving on from this?
I think after the fourth time, I was like, well, here's the thing. By the time that fourth audition happened,
mm-hmm.
I was on a sketch team on Assis.
Right.
And actually, that happened as a pick-me-up after not getting on my third audition.
Cool. So you don't get on your third audition, but you had submitted as a writer to Maud.
I didn't even – I wasn't eligible to submit. I started taking writing classes after I didn't get on a Herald team.
Wow. The first time?
It was the second or third time.
Wow.
I can't remember now.
So that's one of your motivations. So you're like, I'm not getting on a team, personal thing. Let's do it.
Yeah. But I need a creative outlet.
Sure.
I want to be a part of this theater that has come to mean a lot to me over the last –
yeah.
52 years, it feels like, but it really just like four and a half.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
And I took the classes back to back, and very lucky the first time that I submitted as a writer,
right.
I got on Onassis, the team that I was on for a year and a half.
That's awesome.
Which was like the best thing that ever happened.
And a great team, great sketch team. We
Thank
were paired
you.
Up. I was on Gramps, and we would kind of be together. We were together for
we
a
would
year.
We would see like one sketch of each other's show
every show.
Night.
Yep.
But that team was. Like all the people on that team are my best friends now, and they, you know, we did a lot of stuff together. We did shows and we traveled and everything.
You guys made videos and
We made web videos and we did a short film together after we did the Friars Club Film Festival.
Right, and you guys won the Friars.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
Huge. We submitted, did like a best of show for the festival, won $5,000 to make a short film.
Yep,
and did that. And
that was
a lot
great.
Of fun.
Awesome.
So by the time I didn't get on the fourth time, I was like, well, you know what? Maybe that's just not going to happen.
Yeah.
And I have this sketch thing going, which I love, and it's really like fulfilling creatively.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I'm not going to get that thing. And I had really resigned myself to accepting that that might just not happen.
Yeah.
Even though that was the original thing for me.
The original thing was to get onto a Herald
team. Was to get on a Herald team.
Right.
And as much as I loved my indie teams, and everybody has indie teams that are that mean the world to them and they've done like the best shows they've ever done. But we all know that there's something special about that basement theater and we want to be on that stage.
Right.
Like that's just like I feel like anybody who doesn't say that out loud is kind of tricking themselves.
I think you're absolutely right. Absolutely. Absolutely.
And I saw people do that. I saw people say, you know, fuck UCB, fuck Anthony or Nate or whoever's the artistic director. They don't get me.
Right.
I'm too good to not get on a team.
Mm-hmm.
So they either like quit improv or they like forget about UCB or
they kind of fade away or or move on to a different theater or something like that. Right.
And I had gotten to the point where I knew that I wanted to be on a Herald team and I also knew that I might not ever be on one.
Mm-hmm.
So I just said, well, maybe that's like something that I'll never accomplish. And it was
funny.
Depressing, but I was.
But you still had like a fire inside of you. You never said that stuff. Never like, fuck this, fuck that. It was more like you got angry, but you didn't like sit in that then.
Yeah, but I did. I mean, I did other things. But the thing about something that has to be handed to you is that struggling never helps.
Right.
Because if it's something, if you're trying to climb a mountain, then it's all up to your effort.
Right.
If you're trying to convince somebody by virtue of your performances or your attributes or whatever to give you something, if they decide for whatever reason that they don't want to or that you're not good enough or you're not the right person, there's nothing you can do about it.
Yeah.
So greater effort doesn't help. Like, all that will help is acceptance, because you can't change.
Interesting.
So I was like, okay, maybe I'm just never going to be on a Herald team. And then the following audition, I got on.
Yeah.
Which was an invite-only audition. There was just like a few spots to fill. And
it was in like September or something like that. I think it's 2011.
That sounds right.
Right?
Something like
that.
And then I got on Deckard.
Mm-hmm.
And Deckard was a team of people that I loved and that we were all really good friends. We just became friends immediately if we weren't on already. But we just could not do good shows. We just did bad show after bad show. And we were like, all right, after every bad show, we were like, all right, now we got it out of our systems.
Yeah.
But then we would always find more in our systems to get out.
Unbelievable potential. I remember coaching you guys a couple of times. Loved coaching you guys. But yeah, just something. It happens. And that happens when you do get on a team. Like, you might be put on a team that you love everyone, but it just doesn't click. And that's how shit goes. And you just kind of move on and try to do your best and have fun in the moment with it. Not try to get into your head too much about it. That's great. It's amazing that you never grew up wanting to be a writer. You're a writer on Late Night with Jimmy Fallon right now. But you never grew up wanting to really do that. You knew you had liked comedy. But it took you to fall in love with improv and kind of fail at improv.
Yeah.
It's amazing to kind of get to where you are now.
Yeah. I mean, I think that if I had gotten on a Herald team that second or third time, I would never have signed up for Sketch 101 with Eric Scott.
Jesus.
And then 201 with Caitlin Taggart. And then gotten on Onassis.
Mm-hmm.
And it's definitely because of Onassis and Maw Night that I have the job that I have.
It's crazy. That's amazing.
Which is, and I can feel like, even though I've only been in New York for a few years, if you really look at the stuff that happens to you and trace back the good things that exist now, they almost always go to a bad thing.
That is absolutely why I'm doing this.
Yeah.
Because I want to show that. I want this to be inspiring to people that are like, I am done. Like, there's no way.
Yeah.
And it is either that acceptance. Anybody that I'm talking to here, I truly believe that they're like, there's some inner motivation to keep them. Like, they still have a love that they, and that what you said before, a creative outlet to kind of keep moving forward.
Yeah.
And I'm a true believer in momentum and just like, how do I kind of push forward? For you, it's, almost like a, not chip on her shoulder, but like, well, I got to have like this, I didn't get this, so I need to do something.
Mm-hmm.
I need to do something for me. And you kind of kept moving forward with that.
It's a weird thing. Sometimes it's hard to distinguish between just resolve, strong personal resolve, and something that borders on resentment or a chip on your shoulder.
Yep.
Because sometimes you kind of need a fuck the world attitude to get by.
Yeah.
But you don't really want to continue having a fuck the world attitude.
Right, right.
And just be...
You seem to isolate people when that happens. At some point, you need that fuck the world attitude, I think, to push through and really maybe not worry so much about what people perceive you as.
Yeah.
And then at a certain point, you start isolating people because you don't let anyone in.
Uh-huh.
And it's like you're kind of just now just doing it because, like... I don't know.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I think that...
There is a fine line, though.
I think it's possible to say fuck the world without saying fuck anybody in particular.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Absolutely.
Because then if you start actually getting mad at real people and treating them differently, then you're...
Sure.
You've become a jerk.
Sure. And then so you were invited to do a showcase.
Yeah. I would love to talk about that.
Yeah.
About that sketch for a minute.
Oh, yeah. Go ahead.
In January of last year, I guess, I pitched a sketch at an Onassis pitch meeting. And it was even as I was pitching it, I was aware that it was my favorite idea that I'd ever had.
Really?
Of any kind.
Wow.
It made me laugh uncontrollably even to like start to talk about it.
What is the sketch called?
It never had really an official title, but it was a sketch where a medical research expert is giving a presentation to the people that are funding his research.
Yep.
For the first time in 5 years, he's telling them what he's been doing with their $18 million.
Yep.
And what he's been doing is cutting off men's heads and putting them on pigs to see if the heads would keep working. And so for the next 5 minutes, he talks about, like,
I remember, this is the funny thing about this. Well, remember we had Gramps, Gramps's.
Oh, yeah.
We, our sketch teams combined one for 1 month, and Benjamin brought in the sketch for a read-through, or it was just kind of like a pitch meeting read-through.
What month was that?
Shit, I don't remember, man.
Because
August, maybe it was like before, maybe like March or something like that of 2000.
That sounds about right. I'm not sure.
12, I guess.
But three different directors either heard the pitch or the sketch and didn't want to put in the show.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like my favorite thing I'd ever done. And I was like, I want
to
see this happen because it really makes me happy. And I'm gonna
That's like a little fuck it attitude. Like I truly believe in this. Yeah.
And there's kind of a little faith in your teammates. Like, I hope that they don't get tired of hearing about this because I'm going to bring it back because I feel like I have to.
Right.
So I brought it back. And I showed it to three different directors, like three or four different months, and it didn't get in the show. And then finally, Seth Reese came back to direct Onassis for a month, and he put in the show. It went great. It was the best sketch that the best response a sketch of mine had ever gotten.
Awesome.
And then two nights after that, I performed it. Only two nights after seeing it performed for the first time ever, I performed it in the Fallon showcase and then got Fallon because of
it. That's amazing. That is absolutely amazing. Wow.
Thank you, Don. I really feel like that's such a small... I can be very self-important if I try to make it seem like a life lesson or something. But for me, that is a huge life lesson, which is that I was able to listen to that small part of myself that said, maybe you should bring this back this month. And then maybe you should bring it back the next month.
Yep.
Maybe you should bring it back again.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Well, congratulations.
Thanks, Tom.
How's and Fallon's been good. I'm sure it's tough. I'm sure there's little right? Like late night writing for late night. That's gotta be tough.
It's long days and it's definitely a job, which is what I wanted. I was like, I wanna get a job. I wanna be doing this all day and work out all the kinks.
Right.
And to the point where I kind of hate it, but I make myself do it more until I love it again.
Right.
Because if you do anything just like lightly as a hobby, you're never going to get as good at it as you can.
Gotcha.
So I really wanted a job and I got it.
It's amazing. Yeah, that's great.
I love it.
And so before we wrap up here, you said you don't really visualize at that point in your life. Do you do it now? I'm sure you have other goals that you'd like to hit.
I do. And I wanted to talk to you about this
because
when I listened to the podcast that you did on the UCB long form, you talked about Napoleon Hill's Think and Grow Rich.
Yeah.
As soon as I finished listening to that podcast, I searched online. I wanted to find an audiobook of it.
Yep, I have it.
And I found I found what I don't think is technically the audiobook. It's like TV, some kind of TV program that Napoleon Hill did.
Yep. Yeah, he has.
So it's like two and a half hours or something. Mm-hmm. So I downloaded that and have listened to it multiple times, and it's actually made a big impact.
It's crazy, right?
Because it's all about visualizing, which can be a very like mystical new age type thing, but he talks about it in such a practical way.
It's that's what attracted me to it. That I was like, oh, I understand this. If you do anything with like The Secret or anything like that, that's fine. But this is like the OG of that shit. This is like brass tacks, like getting down to it and kind of explaining it in a way that, you still need to have an open mind. Mm-hmm. It's not like you read this and you're like, oh, I got it. It's like
who was that? What's that character?
That's my scarecrow. It's my talking.
Oh, I got it.
Oh, I got it. I got no crow on me. That's it.
I got no crow on me.
Another crow. Yes, I got another crow on me.
What are you gonna
do? I'm working that out.
But what I was gonna say was. I was going to say something very specific.
I'm sorry. My fucking crow, my scarecrow got in the way, man.
So funny, I forgot.
But I mean, I'm happy you did that. I'm happy you checked that out. I'm happy it's worked, and I'm sure. Go ahead.
I know what it was. This guy, Napoleon.
Napoleon.
What an asshole name. Hey, I'm Napoleon Hill. listening to that was the first time I had ever believed somebody when they told me that you are in control of your attitude.
Yep.
Because that's something that's very easy to hear when you're like a depressed teenager, college student. It's easy to be like, ah, fuck you. I'm depressed. I can't help it.
Right.
That kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But for some reason, that sweet old man convinced me that if you choose to have a positive outlook, you actually can.
Yes.
And so as soon as I heard that, like the next day going into work, I was like, I'm going to have a positive attitude. And it worked on it. I'm proof of that.
That's great, man. Thank you so much.
Well, dude, let's end on that, man. That's great. I really appreciate you taking the time.
Thanks for having me.
You're one of my favorite people, and I'm so happy that you're doing well, man. So
thanks, Don. It's good to see you. It's good to be in a little room with
you. Yeah, it's good to be in a little room together, man. All right. See you guys next time. Later.
Sweet. That was Benjamin Apple, Late Night with Jimmy Fallon writer, and overall great UCB guy. Thanks so much for tuning in, guys. And remember, you know, if you have a bad audition, bad rehearsal, bad show, and maybe it's in front of someone that you really respect, don't get in your head about anything like, oh, they think I suck and, you know, I can't get better or anything like that. You know, there's always another show. There's always another audition for you. You can get better. You will get better. You just got to keep the momentum moving forward. So again, special thanks to Benjamin Apple. And of course, always thanks to James Legero, who is our sound guru and is putting this all together. Thank you so much, James. Keep spreading the word on the Need to Fail, guys. Need to Fail on Tumblr and this podcast. And if you again want to send in anything, send it to the needtofail@gmail.com if you want to email me anything. Thanks so much, guys. Thanks for tuning in. Later.